One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello and welcome to the Randomly Generated History Club, where three non-historians pick a year at random and try to learn things about it. I'm Ant, and I'm here with my two friends, Will and Anna.
Hello.
Hello.
This week, we are talking about the year 177. And as is our custom, and what is decreed to us by law by the RNG, we must give three-word preview of what we're going to discuss. Will.
Honestus Imperator Romanus.
Didn't say those three words had to be English, so yeah. Yes.
Okay, I assume we won't get a translation of that.
No.
Okay, good. My three words are, if anyone can.
Who can who?
You'll find out. Emperor Questus Romanus.
Your inflection left me unsatisfied.
Yeah, well, there's an ellipsis at the end. Oh, so.
Well, mine is, proto-Mongol shenanigans.
Oh, you finally embraced the hyphen.
I have. There are two hyphens.
I love that. Yeah. There's two hyphens and a comma.
And a comma.
Ugh.
Uh-oh, proto-Mongol shenanigans.
That is a master of the genre.
I'll probably be punished for it nonetheless.
Amazing. Should we do it then?
Let's.
Okay, let's go.
Here we go.
So today, for my part, we are going to be taken back in time to what is now modern-day China. And at this time, there is a large dynasty in charge called the Han Dynasty. And they had huge swathes of land under their control. And they had managed to suppress the sort of other factions and tribes around there. Famously, they had managed to suppress the five barbarian clans, or the five Hu, namely...
The five who?
The five who, yeah. So namely the Xiong Yu, the Ji, the Yanbei, the Qian, and the Di. There's more than likely more than five. Historians just say the five barbarians, the five who, just as a collective term. There was a mixture of settled and nomadic, some from the sort of Turkic regions, Tibetan, Yanisian, and other areas like that. But we're going to focus mainly on the Yanbei, because they're the coolest,
okay.
I think.
Because they had like holes in their jeans, backwards baseball
they
caps.
They did. They wore a lot of leather jackets, okay, and that kind of thing. And they're from the northern steppes, and they were sort of a proto-Mongol nomadic peoples. So traders, herdsmen, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. But quite nomadic. So after the first century, the north, which at the time was largely Xiongnu, X-I-O-N-G-N-U, was brought under control by the Han Dynasty and became effectively a suppressed vassal state. And they increased their trade mightily in interdependence. So they traded horses, silk, etc. And then the northern tribes there would act as sort of a northern protectorate for the Han dynasty. This caused a tightening of bonds. And what it meant was the steppes were actually slowly degraded and abandoned as people moved closer to the border of the Han dynasty. And there's still, you know, some pockets of revolt and tumult. In the early hundreds, there was a massive campaign by the Han dynasty into the north to sort of quell all the sort of tribes and stuff there. And they barely avoided complete annihilation. So the power vacuum was in full effect on the steppes. And these were then filled by the proto-Mongolians themselves, which include the Yanbei, X-I-A-N-B-E-I, by the way. And another tribe that I love the sound of, which we're not going to talk about, but they're called the Dingling.
I know it's like childish to laugh at that, but that's very funny.
Yeah, the Dinglings don't feature too much further, really, because the Yanbei really sort of crushed it. While they were nominally aligned to the Han dynasty, they also conspired on large-scale raids in the north as well. So they're like, yeah, we'll do trades and stuff with you. But behind their back, they would still, you know, go across the border. And the Han were a bit frayed at this stage, and, you know, their power was waning a little bit. And instead of launching a large campaign again, they'd try economic or political means to fracture the groups of tribes so they wouldn't, like, work with each other. And they'd start spreading rumors about each other, etc. But it didn't really work. And this was at the time when the Han were being internally eroded by a lot of political infighting and intrigue. This was caused by lots of wealth being centralized into powerful families, and this eroded the sort of state's power because these semi-independent autonomous governors would have their own armies that could challenge the Han dynasty. So they had to be politically savvy. They no longer had the monopoly on violence that the state used to have.
The concept of raising one's own army is so funny to me. It's just like, you know what, today I think I should have an army.
Yeah, well, I'm currently raising a...
Oh, are you?
Yeah, I've put out a few LinkedIn posts.
Okay. Okay. What positions are you recruiting for?
I think all of them at this stage. Grand General is obviously me.
It is taken. Yeah. I have some archery experience.
You're hired.
I don't even have to apply.
You can be Chief Archer.
Oh, that's amazing.
Which I fear is going to do not much against NATO's tanks.
It's 100% commission, isn't it, based on plunder?
It is, yeah. You get all the plunder you can get, you can have.
Okay.
So this decentralization of power through the large families amassing all these areas of land and growth, they were de facto rulers in their own right. And this would then go on to continue to erode the Han dynasty. And that would eventually lead in about the 200s or so, what was called the Three Kingdoms era of Chinese history, when there's a great fracturing and schisming. You know, we had all the dynasties and a schisming was happening of power. Mm. So this basically conspired into the perfect opportunity known as the Yanbei Confederacy of Tan Shi Wai.
Oh.
So, who is Tan Shi Wai? He was a low-born, illegitimate son of a low-ranking officer of the Yanbei, born to a sort of mercenary family. But he managed to unify, through his time, the various Yanbei tribes under his rule against the Han court. So he was actually able to get them all together at the same place and time and
unite
the clans. Exactly. And he was also able to do this with other chieftains from other tribes answering to him. And this confederacy became a de facto self-sustaining government. You know, they shared trade profits, they had military duties, they had a coherent, unified political stance that was, like, you know, against the Han. Mm-hmm.
Did he use some sort of horn to unite them?
Absolutely, yeah. It was kind of a horn-based sort of language that
because
they
had. There's got to be something, right? You can't just be like, oh, hey, go tell Tom that we're uniting that. You know, I want something majestic on the steps.
Is that how you think politics works? That, you know, like in the EU or whatever, they just stand up and someone's got a horn and they blow it. And then suddenly...
If someone tried to convince
you
me...
You can't sell bananas.
that's how it works in this country, right? Remember when the guy tried to take the golden scepter out of parliament and everybody lost their minds?
Okay, I take it back. It's not so ridiculous. Yeah,
it's not that ridiculous.
I'd be far more likely to support someone based on them blowing a brass instrument than because of their ideas.
Yeah.
No, I think this would be like an actual horn of an
animal. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's not like a trombone solo.
If it's not going to be like a conch shell, I want it to be an actual animal horn.
So he also blew this horn at the southern Yongnu, who were the ones in the north that were previously nearly annihilated. And he got them into an alliance and he got aid from others as well, contributing towards this sort of push and assault against the Han. The Han were not best pleased. And so they decided to launch yet another huge campaign in 177, so the year in question.
Oh,
and
nice.
This consisted of 30,000 Han cavalry.
Wow.
Give or take.
Does that count the horses?
That doesn't count the horses.
So, you know, 60,000.
You know, if they're cavalry, you expect to at least have one horse each. Yeah, maybe one, two. Yeah.
Sorry, are you suggesting that we should, when counting cavalry, we should count both the human and the horse separately?
Yeah. And in fact, maybe we should count by legs. Oh, yeah. So each cavalry unit is six.
There's
legs.
Six times the figure there.
Yeah.
Oh,
exactly.
Wow.
120 legs at this battle.
120,000 legs
of cavalry.
So they did the greatest tactical maneuver of all time, where instead of actually charging with 30,000 against one people and taking them out, they split it up into three armies and went three different directions.
Great.
And they advanced on different axes into the north to different sort of large tribal masses of the northern Yanbei, the largest federations. It didn't go well.
Yeah.
For the Han.
This is what they say, isn't it? It's like when you're trying to conquer people, always water down your forces as possible.
That's what it means. Divide and conquer. Yeah. Divide your troops.
Divide your own troops.
Conquer.
Conquer nothing.
And you will be conquered.
You will be conquered.
Yeah.
So the Han lost 80% of their advancing troops. So that's about 24,000 men and six times the number of legs.
Or possibly some horses lost just one leg or some men lost one leg.
There could be people on there with no legs.
So we don't actually know how many legs.
This is 24,000 men, so maybe all the horses are fine.
Okay.
You know,
I would love that, personally.
And the few officers that did remain, they only came back with like a couple of tens of troops because the rest kind of just fled into the ether and they were immediately lost their position and rank and stuff.
Really whiffed it.
Yeah, they completely whiffed it, really. And this was really one of the big death knells for the Han dynasty. And this really then spun into the slow decline where their borders were pushed south and east by this migrating tribes in the steppes. And this would eventually then go on to contribute to the dawning of the Three Kingdoms and eventually the rise of the Mongols as well after this, with, of course, our best friend.
Your boy.
My boy.
Yeah.
Genghis Khan.
Genghis!
Chinggis. Chinggis Khan.
Yeah.
That's the story of the Han Dynasty.
I'm talking about China as well. And talking a little bit more about the Three Kingdoms period, which we've covered before a couple weeks ago when we talked about Lady Tru, she of the remarkable body proportions. That was in our 244 episode. If you haven't listened to it, go give it a shot. So my three words were, if anyone can, and I'd like to complete the sentence now. If anyone can, Wang Can. That's right. I'm talking about a man named Wang Can.
Oh, right. Not that Wang was able to.
No. His name is Wang Can. And I want to absolve myself from any pronunciation snobbery. I did ask two friends who speak Mandarin how to read his name. And yeah, so Wang is more like Wang. But neither of them had ever seen the character for Can, his other name. They both were like, oh, this is, I don't know what this is. So I'm going to choose to say Wang Can, and I think that's fine.
It's also funnier.
It's also funnier. And I'm sure everyone's thinking it, so I just want to get this right out of the way up front. I'm not talking about Wang Can, the present day social media influencer who gained infamy, I would say, for a stunt where he ate a live wasp.
Wow.
With predictable consequences. Whoa. Yeah, he did it on whatever the Chinese equivalent of TikTok is.
TikTok.
And is it TikTok? Yeah, I guess. And then he ate it live on air. It stung the crap out of him. His whole face swelled up. And then he had to post this big apology video for what he did. And just like,
apologizing to the wasps.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Very pro wasp.
That is pretty a grim way to gain popularity, but I'm willing to do it if it helps the podcast.
Yeah, well,
I'll eat whatever you want.
I've got a wasp.
You have a wasp. Yeah. I'm willing to eat it. No, we should record it. I can't just mime eating a wasp on air.
It's also hugely dangerous. Like, the Guild of Wasp Influencers are highly litigious and will come after you.
The GWI,
absolutely.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
You get them everywhere.
So anyway, I'm not talking about him, just to be clear, so they can't come after us. No, instead I'm talking about Wang Can, the man from the second century. So as Ant mentioned, the Han is collapsing. It's collapsing in China proper into these three kingdoms. And one of those three kingdoms is called Cao Wei, and that's what I'll be focusing on today. So Wang Can was born in 177, which I don't normally do, the borns, but I did it today, into a family of high-ranking civil servants. As he's growing up, it becomes clear that he's a very special boy. He had an eidetic memory, for starters. There's this great story about one time he was passing by and two people were playing Go, and somebody knocked the board and all the tiles fell off, and he was able to put the tiles back in the exact position that they'd been in before the board got knocked over.
There were three tiles.
Yeah. Still, it's impressive.
Very impressive. Yeah. Very impressive.
And it was said that if he was traveling and passed a roadside monument, he would remember every word of the inscription with just a glance, which is just such a valuable skill. At the pub quiz I go to now, there's a round called Service Station or Cheese, and he would have been very good at that.
For our foreign listeners, most of our service stations, i.e. gas stations on the motorways, are all named after cheeses.
So it's actually an impossible
tradition.
Round to
yeah, it's
do.
Both.
Anyway, so that's cool. We love a big brain. Another great story is that when he was a teenager, he met a prominent scholar and calligrapher who immediately just recognized his talent and proclaimed, "He is a young man with the highest gifts, which I cannot match. I shall grant him all the books and essays in my home."
That sounds like a punishment.
I know. Books is one thing, but essays.
Thank you for all those essays, Grandma. Oh, I love
thanks,
this.
Thanks for letting me read all your treatises. But in fact, this guy, this calligrapher, was one time so excited to greet Wang Can that in his haste to open the door, he put his shoes on the wrong feet.
Oh.
Which is just like, everybody's obsessed with this man.
Like,
you guys aren't even wearing shoes. Do you even respect me at all?
No, that's a bizarre thing to note in history. The one of the few things that we know is that some guy put his shoes on the wrong way.
Yeah.
They're also perturbed. Mm.
Yeah, well, everybody's just in a tizzy because this guy's really going places. The scholar, the prominent wrong-footed, wrong-shoed scholar, recommends him for the civil service, but Wang Can turns it down. Instead, he wants to go work for this provincial governor, who then turns him down because he looked, quote, pallid and sickly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that is the reason I've never had a job in my life. But ultimately, he gets a job in government working for a man named Cao Cao, who is in charge of Cao Wei. This is C-A-O, which I mentioned earlier is one of the three kingdoms.
Do you think there's some future civilization
that will listen to this podcast and decide that wasn't worth it?
Well, that is the current civilization. But do you think there's some future civilization who will listen to all the words that we say in our language right now, and they'll just also coincidentally be really funny?
Yeah.
In the same way that there's like a perfect resonance between them and our and
totally
us.
They'll see your name and they'll be like, "Wild, how silly." So Cao Cao and Wang Can are having a great time establishing the administration. Mm. Wang Can is in charge of coming up with a brand new system of laws, which is just a cool task.
Ask Stoats.
Ask Stoats?
Yes, yeah, ask Stoats what to do. The Stoats will decide on the laws.
It was
that is the new system for the laws.
It was a not so popular sort of British clone of Ask Jeeves that didn't really take off.
Yeah,
Ask Stoats.
Really, really popular in Dorset.
Really popular
in 2003 to 2005.
A lot of Stoats just squirrying around the place trying to find your information. Let me check my notes. Oh no, he went with Ask Voles.
Oh, the Voles.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. They are wiser and easier to find.
Definitely wiser. He also, you know, consults his own brain, I guess. Boo. He accompanies Cao Cao on various military campaigns, including one against Sun Quan, who was the bad guy in the Lady True story.
Oh.
And he also becomes a very famous poet, one of the seven scholars of Jian'an, which was the A-list poetry group of the day, as I'm sure you all know.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently all the civil strife in China.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
At this time, gives the group their... quote, characteristic solemn yet heart-stirring tone while lamenting over the ephemerality of life.
Wow, that sounds like my high school journal.
I was like, if you had a live journal, which I assume you did.
Of course I had a live journal.
I assume it's just full of poems lamenting about the ephemerality of life.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
God, I want to find that so bad.
It was pretty deep and heavy. I don't know if you're ready for it.
Probably not.
I mean, I'll recite some of my poetry.
Okay, good. We'll put that on the Patreon for members don't want to support the podcast anymore. Would you like me to read from one of Wang Ken's
journals?
Poems?
Oh, phew. Oh, phew. Oh, wow. Okay, yes. We want to.
Yes, this
please.
Poem is called Poem of the Seven Sorrows.
Okay.
So my gosh.
It's great material for a
comedy podcast. How many sorrows?
Seven sorrows.
Ripped me off.
Seven Sorrows. All right, and this is just an excerpt from it. On the road, a starving woman who hugs her child, then abandons him in the weeds. She turns to hear his screams and howls, then wipes her tears and goes on alone, saying, I hardly know where I shall die.
Right, okay, let's just break this one down. Why is she leaving her child in the reeds?
I think because she can't feed herself, so she certainly can't feed him. So rather than just like hold him and die together,
the reed people.
Yeah,
take him.
Maybe somebody will pick him up.
Mm. But she could come up with a better plan. That's just.
Oh, she's got a lot of problems. Planning is but one of them.
I don't know where I'm going to die.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
It is. This poem is about you.
Unless you're planning something.
Well, I know how I'll behave at your funeral. Because I would like to tell one final story about Wang Can.
Yes.
Yes.
When he died in 217, the heir to the throne of Cao Wei told the guests at his funeral, when he was still living, Wang Can loved the sounds of a donkey braying. So let's each make a braying sound as a farewell to him. And they did.
That's got to be a joke. That's got to be a joke.
Right. I mean, because like of all the sounds in the animal kingdom, a donkey braying is objectively one of the
terrible.
Bad ones.
It is bad.
Yeah. Like, I would love it if people made a sound of a horse whinnying majestically at my funeral.
No, you would.
Maybe horses. What? Maybe they brayed differently back then.
Oh, back in the days of the beautiful donkey bray?
Like, are we talking exactly. Like a proper like hee-haw?
Yeah.
Thing?
Well, that's
yeah.
How they bray now.
That's how they bray now.
Yeah, maybe they did.
In English. But I don't know whether
ancient Mandarin, we're not sure.
That's
actually.
True.
Ancient Mandarin,
it could maybe have sounded like an aria.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or like a harp being gently strung.
I stand corrected then. Yeah, you're probably right. But anyway, that is the story of Wang Can and all of his wonders. And now you know.
Now I know why you invited me on that trip to the reed beds. You're planning to murder me there.
Listen, I don't know where I will die, but I do know where you will die.
Oh, God.
She's not going to murder you. She's just going to hug you and place you down and then leave you.
And then leave you to the sounds of me braying like a donkey as I walk away.
You know I'm incapable of fending for myself.
Hac septimana loqui de omnibus principi philosopho gratissimo Marcus Aurelius Romanorum imperator.
Today I'm talking about the first philosopher emperor, Marcus Aurelius.
No, that's not
okay.
What I said.
To get some of them right?
I don't know if you noticed actually, but I was actually speaking Latin there.
I honestly couldn't tell the difference.
It sounded like a donkey braying to me.
But oh, yeah, I'm sorry, that was Latin. So this week I'm going to talk about everyone's favorite philosopher emperor.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
The Roman Emperor Marcus Aurelius.
Yeah. The guy from Gladiator.
The guy from
That's
Gladiator.
Right, the guy from Gladiator.
Yay! The good guy from Gladiator, not Joaquin Phoenix. Spoiler.
Well, we're going to come to all of this.
Okay, good.
But yes, the good guy from Gladiator, okay, with the bad succession planning. And Marcus Aurelius was born in 121 and ruled as emperor from 161, from the age of about 40, until he died in 180, when he was about 59. And he was the last of the rulers who became known as the Five Good Emperors,
oh,
which was a term coined by Niccolo Machiavelli some 13 centuries later.
Yes, yeah, I was going to say a long
Uncle
time after.
Much later. So for a long time, he wasn't known as that at all. He, sure, was just Marcus Aurelius. And when talking about those five emperors, Machiavelli said, Titus, Nerva, Trajan, Hadrian, Antoninus, and Marcus. Those are the names of the five emperors, by the way.
That sounded like six.
That's true. Machiavelli can't count.
He had a lot of strengths. Counting was, yeah, not one of them.
He did. Makes me question other things he said.
Your whole worldview, actually.
To continue the quotation, those people, all five of them, had no need of Praetorian cohorts or of countless legions to guard them, but were defended by their own good lives, the goodwill of their subjects, and the attachment of the Senate. End quotation. So they were just jolly good people, is the point. And they didn't need bodyguards and all the rest. So I'm going to dig into a bit about why he was such an apparently bonum ovum, which is Latin for good egg, which is an English idiom for a good person.
Bonum ovum.
Which was,
Jesus.
Which is Bono's full name.
So he was born during the reign of Hadrian, who was the emperor who had the fondness for walls and the anti-fondness for Scots.
Yep.
And Marcus Aurelius, who was quite fortunate when he was growing up, because when he was born, no one would have thought that he was going to be emperor. So he was born to the emperor's nephew and to a wealthy heiress called Domitia Cavilla. And when he was born, he was just this fairly obscure minor royal. So, yeah. But then his father died, sadly, when he was three, and so he was raised by his mother and grandfather. And then after Hadrian's adopted son died, the current emperor's current adopted son died, the emperor then saw there was, like, you know, elsewhere in his extended family, a son without a father,
and
so he adopted him, who was also a bonum ovum, and he adopted him as his new heir.
It's a real heir. Pull yourself by your bootstraps is kind of story, you know. All you got to do is be born into royalty, have lots of money.
pull yourself up by your beautiful gilded leather bootstraps.
and then Marcus's uncle, Antoninus Pius, was that person that was adopted by Hadrian. And so suddenly Hadrian then died 2 years later, and suddenly he's gone from being this minor figure to suddenly being the heir to the throne. And so it was quite a big jump. And then when his uncle died in 161, Marcus Aurelius then acceded to the throne alongside his adoptive brother, who reigned under the name Lucius Verus. And despite having a reputation today as a thoughtful, philosophical type, under his rule, the Roman Empire witnessed some of, like, very, very heavy military conflict.
Mm.
And so in the east, the Romans were fighting against the Parthians and the rebel kingdom of Armenia. And there were also major conflicts with Germanic peoples. And the persecution of the Christians under the empire at the time also appears to have increased under his reign rather than decreased.
I mean, he's probably doing all that really philosophically.
You can thoughtfully fight the Germanic people.
also just think deeply and be bad.
Yeah.
So there was a bit of that going on. And then there was the Antonine Plague, which broke out in about 165, which devastated the population of the Roman Empire at the time. So it was a time of general strife and difficulty, really, in some ways.
There's got to be a way for you, Ant, to work in the Antonine Plague into your life.
Doctor said it's clearing up and I just need to keep applying the cream, so leave me alone.
Well, this plague was one that ended up killing about 10% of the whole population at the time.
Oh, you're only on 6 or 7,
yeah,
right?
I'm barely touching the surface.
So they didn't have any cream. And it was probably smallpox, but we're not really sure it was.
Okay.
And the co-emperor brother then died about this time, so it's probable that he died of that plague, unfortunately. And unlike some of his predecessors, and this is one of the only bits of the film that they got right, Marcus chose not to adopt an heir. And if my research in general for this podcast has taught me anything, it's that this is a huge error.
Yeah. Well, if my watching of Gladiator tells me anything, it is a huge error.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, as an aside, Maximus should definitely have just kowtowed to Commodus in that film.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's far too principled.
He made so many bad choices because of his principles.
He could have been, like, set up as general for life and having a great time.
He also could have been, you know, hanging out a little more with Connie Nielsen.
Yeah. Yes,
yeah. So beautiful.
She's great.
Yeah.
And in this one, so in this version of the events, which is actually the way things actually happen in reality, Commodus was ended up co-ruling with him before his death for about 3 years. And there's no real evidence for that for Commodus being anything other than just kind of like, okay, he wasn't really a baddie in any way.
Did Maximus exist? Is this just completely fictitious? Is it anyway based in reality?
I can't remember.
Oh, I can't remember either.
I think there was a Roman general called Maximus at one point, but I don't think there was any particular link. But maybe we can do some Googling at the same time. And then one of the main reasons why Marcus Aurelius is famous today is that he wrote a book called Meditations.
Oh, yes.
Which was actually written whilst Marcus was on military campaigns between 170 and 180. And he wrote it in Greek as a source for his own guidance and self-improvement. And there's no obvious mark or an obvious sign that he thought of having it published in any way.
I actually tried to read this when I was a teen, you know, in between bouts of writing in my journal, but I tried to read it and it is impenetrable. And I got like 2 chapters in or something and I was like, okay.
Well, it's just mostly like, just a bunch of like disconnected thoughts, right?
Yeah, it's
idioms.
It's like sort of proto James Joyce stream of consciousness.
It's just like, you know, like quippy one-liners.
You know? Love that. So side note, yes, I did please. Look it up. Maximus is not real. He's a fictional character.
There we are.
But it was based on, you know, a composite of other generals.
That makes sense.
Yep.
I still believe.
And he had a very logical mind, and his notes were representative of Stoic philosophy and spirituality, which has actually become quite popular again in the last 10, 20 years in the West. And the book is still revered as a literary monument to a government of service and duty. Hmm. And some people consider it to be one of the greatest works of philosophy anywhere.
Wow.
It actually didn't circulate particularly widely after his death.
Shocking.
And copies mainly survived by reproduction in the Eastern Church. And then they weren't published until 1558 in Zurich by a guy called Wilhelm Zeilander. And, which is a cool name.
Zeilander!
And the oldest surviving complete manuscript is in the Vatican Library and dates to the 14th century. Yes?
Sorry, I'm just picturing Ben Stiller. Zeilander.
Just hold, like standing on a hilltop holding the Meditations
and
over
the Meditations.
His head.
Water is the essence of wetness, isn't it?
With a Swiss accent.
Yeah, yeah.
Which we can all do.
Yeah. So it's not like it was immediately popular, and it's basically become more popular and famous as time has gone on, really. So there you have it.
Did you know they're making a Gladiator 2?
I did not know that.
Yeah. With Paul Mescal from Normal People.
Okay. And what's it going to be about?
Two Gladiator, Two Furious.
It's family.
Exactly.
Well, that's everything you'll need to know about 177. Nothing else exists in history.
Yep.
So that's it.
China and Rome. And before we get to picking next week's number year, I believe we got a correction email in.
No, we don't. there isn't one.
While I believe everything you've ever said is exactly accurate, we had a listener disagree. Will, do you have that email?
I do. So we have an email in from Alex.
Hi, Alex.
And Alex has got a few points to make about the Christmas special.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that you have lived up to the high academic expectations of the podcast, I'm afraid. So at 2 minutes 42 seconds into your podcast, Ant tried to put squid into the taxonomic class cephalopod rather than cephalopod. It seems the only other organization on the internet that tries to wrongly class squid into the taxonomic class cephalopod produces fabric for children covered with octopus. She then links to spoonflower.com. She goes on, The good news is that if your random number generator ever produces any year between 1769 and 1832, Ant can learn from his mistakes by teaching the world about the eminent French naturalist and zoologist Georges Cuvier, who he was responsible for branching the animal kingdom into four initial phylums.
Phylums? Yep.
Including Mollusca. Why did she mention that?
Because Mollusca is the phylum that contains the order Cephalopoda.
I see. And subsequently coining the term Cephalopoda.
Right.
I'm
still like getting over the severe burns I had last time from the RNG for my corrections to the 1,000 years out.
Every time I remember that, I laugh.
I'm not sure what other punishments is befitting, but I will undertake them. I am so sorry. To my fans, I apologize. To my mother, I'm sorry. I'm such a disappointment. Mm-hmm. It is cephalopod. I know this.
Yeah, it's all right. It was a learning experience. Yeah, and we all found a fabric with octopus on it that we can buy for our children's
clothes. I'm not here to learn. If you're here to learn, you're in the wrong place.
It's also particularly offensive because, according to our stats, we have at least 240 cephalopod listeners.
And that's true, yeah.
We gained a lot after we talked about the Bulgarian lobster rebellion a few weeks ago.
We've offended our base.
And you know how many legs that is? More than all the cavalries of the world combined.
That is 1,600 legs of listeners we have offended there.
To my tentacled brethren, please forgive me. And Alex, thank you so much for pointing this out. I want to grow as a person from this.
I think you will. I think you will grow. And to anybody else who has corrections, send them in, especially if they're about Ant.
Yeah, please.
We've only had a handful of corrections in so far.
Well, we've only made a handful of mistakes.
I'm sure that's not true.
Yeah, including 2 minutes ago when I called cephalopoda an order instead of a class, which is what it is. So pen down, Alex. We caught that one.
Should we try and find out what year we can make more errors against?
I think we should. Will, would you like to boot up the random number generator?
Absolutely. It is moving over towards me with its land paddles, and the next year is 910 BCE.
Oh, no corrections then.
No, there's no history then, right? So I can just make up whatever you want.
God, I never thought we'd actually get that far.
Me neither.
I was going to say, because I think that episode will come out on Valentine's Day, I was thinking, should we try to make a love-themed podcast? No. But at this point,
love wasn't invented then.
Love wasn't invented.
Love was invented by like Hallmark and De Beers to sell diamonds and cards.
That's exactly right. As a side note, remember when we were first talking about the podcast and we were initially going to say 2500 BCE to 2000?
Yeah. Which mean
when we amended the suggested amending the bylaws that had been handed down to us from generations.
Agreed. To this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Good. Phew.
Oh, yeah, I'm so glad that bylaw didn't pass.
Okay, 910 BCE. I think we should wrap this up so we can go start researching.
I think so too.
See you next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.